Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm and author of Investing Simplified, the book. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America, with a financial advisor, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and is broadcast live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck with a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com. Or you can call him right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. Or for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
Good morning. We're wasting our time on the music today, and we're all scheduled for a nice talk today. This is Carl Jepsen's filling in for Chuck Price, and in the studio with me is Kevin Stege.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. And Chuck is vacationing, as far as I know, and he's having a good time in a warm place.
That's my understanding also.
Well, yep. There you go. That's a good thing. He'll come back cheerful, I'm sure. Anyway, this is a show which is primarily intended to be interactive with our listeners. And so that means you have to ask questions. So without further ado, I will give you those numbers again. And they are 503-417-9595. That's locally. And then the long distance number is 877-733-1011. And I give you those because they are the numbers that will lead you to us, and we will try to answer your questions as best we can. We want to talk about taxes. We want to talk about estate planning. The investing part of it's a little less today because Chuck's gone, but we'll do our best with it. If you want to ask us, we're just not sure that we would fill into that particular area.
but as always, this is when Chuck's gone, this is the show where we get to guarantee investment returns for him.
Well, that's true. Yes. We promise on his behalf.
Exactly.
Yeah, as his agent. Yeah,
that's right.
No.
It goes up every time he's gone.
That's right. That's true. The what 10, 12.3% or something like that?
I think we're up to 20%.
Oh, yeah, sure. That'll work. Yeah. No, honestly, that doesn't work either. No. Anyway, he just had apoplexy when he heard the show, you know. So anyway, one of the things we'd like to talk about, though, is we're going to want to talk about the tax bill and its potential ramifications, because it has some for both, you know, income tax, estate tax, all of those kinds of things that cover all of our practices. And we're still uncertain because they haven't reconciled the bills between the House and the Senate. So Kevin's going to take the laboring oar on that issue. We thought we might talk a little bit about maybe just some questions that, you know, you have of your own that you haven't thought about for a while. But if you were going to go have your estate planning done, these are the kind of questions that a lot of times nobody wants to ask. But suppose your spouse were to remarry after you die. Okay, and now let's suppose that you had kids on a prior marriage side, and so did she. Okay, so when you go to set up your estate planning, do you want to restrict it so that she can't give the money away to somebody other than your kids and her kids? I mean, or do you want her to have him to have carte blanche authority over whatever's left? So those are very difficult, you know, questions, and oftentimes can lead to some sort of uncomfortable moments in the interview. So it's really good to think about early.
Well, especially if one spouse has significant assets and the other doesn't have much, and this would be a marriage later in life for both of them, say after the kids are grown and gone, we see a lot of it.
Oh, yeah, we see a lot of it, and things can be done, but mm-hmm. but you have to pretty much agree on it, or if you can't agree on how you really want to do it, then what happens is you end up with two lawyers, the lawyer can't take a case at estate planning that is a conflict. I mean, if the spouses are fighting about what needs to be done, that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
I've had that happen occasionally, not too often. Usually the spouses have thought it out well enough in advance, but that's things that you need to talk about. Because those are issues that come up, and we all say, oh, well, they wouldn't do that. Well, some people say they won't get cancer either, but they do. So other kinds of things that you might want to, if you're interested in, is, what about the grandchildren? A lot of people just say, okay, we're just going to leave it to the kids, and they'll take care of their own kids. Other people say, well, I want to guarantee that they have enough money to go to college, so I'm going to set up something that the mom and dad can't touch. And it's got to be, it's just going to be for the kids' education or something like that. So I'm not making passing judgment on either of those. It's just that they come up, and it's important to consider how that might work for your family. So another kind of thing is, and this is the one that nobody wants to hear. What happens if one of your children dies first? Does it go to his kids in trust or her kids in trust? Does it go to the spouse? That one raises all sorts of hair on the back of the neck sometimes. On the other hand, though, if the wife says, if I die, it goes to my husband and vice versa, well, maybe that's not such a bad wrong. Maybe that's the way they wanted it. You hear a lot of discussion about the potentially evil, the uncertainty, shall we say, the uncertainty of the in-law. Just a thought that you might want to consider before you do any kind of estate planning.
Yeah.
And so those kinds of things. But we'd really like to know what you have on your mind, because we don't always know what subjects you want to hear, and we would love to address those subjects. And our listeners, you're the people that know what you're concerned with. And if you're concerned with it, we'd like to see if we can give you some direction. Bear in mind, however, that the direction we give you is general education. It's information. It is not specific legal advice or tax advice. We can't do that unless you became our client and we actually got to meet you face-to-face and all that kind of thing, mostly because we can't possibly know all of the facts or take the kind of time that's appropriate to give you an answer or to research things to make sure that we're right about what we think. So we'll give you our best shot at it, but just bear in mind, confirm that with your own tax people or your own lawyer before you act on it, because that's our disclaimer today, and I think it's a good one.
I think so too.
So
I think we give better advice than just for entertainment purposes only, but
right,
there's a qualification to that advice. So
yeah, well, entertainment value. Well, boy, they're gonna, that's a little tough.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, Kevin. What's the status of the tax bill right now? I mean, in terms of,
yes.
Yeah, you mentioned that you looked at some kind of a summary from the committee that's trying to reconcile it. That sounded kind of an interesting thing.
Well, that's kind of a nice way to put it. Last night, I stayed up for a couple hours past my normal bedtime reading the Joint Taxation Committee's summary of the Senate and House bill. Basically, right now, they're reconciling the two bills. And this summary, it was like 50 some odd pages where they listed every similarity in each bill that didn't need to be reconciled, every difference that did need to be reconciled, and then unique features that each bill had. And it was about 50 some odd pages. It's kind of interesting. They have about a 29-person committee that is going to be reconciling this. I believe it's halfway bipartisan, but I think we know if the Republicans want it to go through, it can go through. And in fact, Oregon, the state of Oregon, actually has two members on that 29-person committee. Ron Wyden on the one side, of course, he's pretty influential on the minority side of things, and then the fella up out of the Dalles, whose name escapes me right now. It'll come to me in the show. But anyway, he's
you'll
been,
notice I didn't volunteer because
didn't,
I couldn't remember either.
Okay,
so,
yes, on the Republican side of things. So he's working there. So it'll be interesting to see how they reconcile this. When we come to the tax investigator, we will chat about, for our investors, a couple key issues to be looking at to see which way they go. It will be a significant difference for investors on a couple key issues. And so we will chat about that later. But anyway, I think we do want to chat about the estate implications of what's happening there. I think you and I were both talking here this week with some clients about, you know, what happens if something goes through one way or the other way, and what are the rules going to be? And the House and the Senate bill are very different. Probably one of the key differences is the Senate bill doesn't get rid of the estate tax. The House bill does get rid of it. And so when you're talking the Senate bill getting rid of it in, I'm sorry, the House bill getting rid of it, I think in, the Senate in 6 years, I think it has to revert back to the status it is now. And so
They sunsetted the repeal of
the
estate tax.
Well, then the problem is the Senate side, because they don't have 60 votes, the Senate side has to have it can't drive up the long-term deficit. And so the Senate side has to have a lot more controls and restraints to how the whole bill works out. And so basically, all of these provisions, every single one of the changes, sunsets in like 2024 or 2025 and reverts back to where we are today. I hate that.
Oh, that is so messy.
How can our businesses, you know, they're talking about significant changes to business taxation where it would completely change the structure that you would set up as, or it would make you potentially convert to a different type of business, maybe to a C corp, so on and so forth, and you would do this for 6 or 7 years and then go back to the rules where you'd want to be what you were before. It doesn't make sense other than kicking the can down
the road.
And the next president would have to deal with that. So
that was exactly my thought. I thought, yeah, they're going to look at the tough issues and they're going to say, oh, well, we'll think about that later.
Yeah.
So
I guess that's politics in our day and age, is you get what you can while you can, and then the next person up, they get what they can while they can, and we just pendulum them back and forth.
Yeah, you know, that's for sure. Well, it looks like we're coming pretty darn close to a break time. So we'll take a quick break, and then when you come back, we're hoping that we'll find, oh, it looks like we have a caller waiting. If Mike can wait on the caller, we'd appreciate it. We'll hear from you in just a minute.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We're located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Colson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Well, Kevin and I are back, and Kevin is just about to get into some tax questions. And Mike, are you still on the line?
I sure am.
Well, terrific. I think I'm going to defer to Kevin on the tax question. So ask away.
All right. Hi. I understand that if you make under a certain amount of money, you do not have to file taxes. Is that true?
That is true. Absolutely.
So I'm on Social Security and a military pension. So I make probably under $15,000 a year. Do I actually have to go and fill out a tax form and mail it in?
Oh, that's a good question. Most likely for the IRS, no. But possibly for Oregon, yes. For the IRS, it's kind of they never make it easy. Basically, I think you take half your Social Security and all of your federal pension. And are you single or married?
I'm single, and it's not a federal pension. It's a disability payment from the Army.
Oh, got you. VA disability benefits.
Yes,
oh,
correct.
That's not taxable then. That doesn't even factor in whatsoever. You don't have a filing requirement. Usually, even a large Social Security check isn't going to generate a filing requirement. So if disregarding the disability pension, if Social Security is your only income, other than a little interest or something, it sounds to me like you do not have to file.
So I don't even have to go down and have ARP fill out my taxes.
Doesn't sound like it.
Boy, that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Kevin, actually, you're my wife's tax guy.
Oh, well, excellent. Very good.
Yes. Okay, if you may, on that the tax bill, I'd like you to answer a question for me.
Sure.
Why are people on the left so worried about people who have more money than them? Why does anybody care about a rich person? A rich person has never stood in my way.
You know, I've benefited a lot by folks who have worked hard in their life and done well for themselves. I'm wearing Nike shoes. I wear a Columbia jacket. You know, these are folks who, you know, I have Intel chips in my computer. I agree. It's I think, you know, that's what makes America unique to all countries is the ability to benefit from your hard work and to profit from your hard work if that's what you want. And I agree with you there, Mike.
Well, William Buckley once said years ago that the purpose of America was affluence. That's why people come here.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that is for sure. Yep.
Yes. All right, thank you very much for your help. I sure appreciate it.
Well, that was a great question. What looks like... So back to the tax bills.
Yes.
Oops. Well, before we start you back on that, it looks like this is right up your alley. This is Gordon from Portland, and looks like he's got an interesting question for you. So, Gordon, are you with us?
Oh, hi. Yes, I am. I have two questions. Well, okay. Yeah. First of all, on the gentleman who read the tax, the new tax laws they're proposing. Are they both going to eliminate charitable contributions?
No, not charitable contributions. Itemized deductions are going to be influenced by the increased standard deduction, and so you may not get a benefit from contributing charitably as much as you would have because the standard deduction would be better. But no, they're not getting rid of charitable deductions.
Okay, they aren't. And then my other question is for both you guys, and Chuck isn't there, about Bitcoin, because that's just gone. I have some of it, and it's gone up to over 17,000. So I know it's not a traditional investment. I'm fully aware of that. I just thought maybe you guys had some insight on that.
I do not at this point. I read the news stories like you do. I'd be curious to see Chuck's take. I think he's fairly conservative on that approach.
Yeah, I would think so too. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, great question. I'm kind of curious about that Bitcoin thing too, because I think it's a way that's. I think it's going to be one of those things that's going to give government fits until they can get their head around it and their hands on it.
Well, it's a very interesting. Technology that could provide, along with, blockchain technology in combination with that, it could be a very interesting change to our economic future. But that's a topic for another show, I believe. So, so I thought I would discuss an item, a difference in the Senate and House tax bills that would directly infect like a cold, our investors. It will directly affect our investors. And that is, the Senate bill has a provision that would, well, let me start with the current law right now allows you, when you sell a security, you get to choose which lot you are selling. You have a you have bought 1,000 shares, 100 shares 10 times over, 1,000 shares of a particular company, you decide to sell 500, you can choose which of those 1,000 you are selling. Specifically identify it, or as they call it, the adequate identification rules.
And why would one do that?
Very good question. It lets you basically control, to some extent, your gain or loss. So if you bought 100 shares 25 years ago and you have very low basis, and you bought 100 shares last year and you have a high basis and very little gain, then you'd want to sell probably, depending on what you're planning here, you'd probably want to sell the more recently acquired shares so that you would recognize less gain if you, you know, whatever your plan is for selling. Well, the Senate in their bill says you have to sell on a first-in, first-out basis, except the hedge fund managers and those folks who, yes, that's kind of ticks me off. It's kind of like, yeah, I know you have business reasons.
You mean those poor folks?
Exactly. Yeah they mm-hmm. can, well, those who are in business for this type of thing. So, but that's pretty significant in terms of, you know, most people, your common investors probably just selling, your advisors selling their shares, or maybe you're just buying and selling, you know, 100 shares here and you sell them, buy 100, sell them. But for the more sophisticated investor, it's pretty significant in being able to manage your gain or loss for the year. Or anyway, it's something to watch. One thing I do want to make a note of, and I think this is very significant. Okay, and we'll get back to that at a later time. It sounds like we have another caller.
Well, actually, it's Mike is back. So, Mike, you back?
I forgot to ask you, what's the amount of money, the cutoff amount, that you do not have to file taxes?
Oh, okay. I'll get real personal here. What's your age?
I'll be 72 in February. I'm 71 now.
Okay, so you are over 65 and single.
Yes. Okay. That's correct, yes.
Okay, so for I don't have 2017 numbers, but for 2016, that would be about $12,000 of taxable, of gross income, I should say. And to calculate that, it's you don't use all of your Social Security. You only use half of it. So.
So I'm well within that figure.
Yes, exactly. And Oregon doesn't tax Social Security, so you're in pretty good shape.
Okay, fellas, thank you very much for your show. I absolutely appreciate it.
Thanks for calling back.
Bye-bye.
That's our second two-timer. We had a two-timer last week.
Well, we were looking for three, but
that's
never
right.
know. But
that's right.
A record.
That's right.
So So I can see how that could be a problem. For some people, because you know you would try to you certainly want to minimize your tax risk, and you would be able to do that by selling the most recent or the one that the highest basis.
That's right.
Certainly. So
well, here's two tips for the year end that are almost of course talk with your tax advisor, but these are almost no brainers. So. One of the deductions that's going to be gotten rid of is the state and local income tax deduction. So if you typically owe on Oregon, you do not want to pay that balance due in 2018 because it will not be deductible in 2018. So make sure you prepay your Oregon tax in 2017 if you're an itemizer. It can't hurt to prepay by 12/31. And yes, that requires an estimate, but you generally know whether you owe Oregon or not. So if you pay it in 12/31, in 2017, you'll get a deduction on your federal return of this Oregon prepayment. So that is almost, even err on the side of paying a little bit more in. If you get a refund from Oregon, at least you maximized your Oregon state tax deduction for 2017 best you can. So that's kind of a no-brainer at this point.
So if I'm one of those estimate people that pays money quarterly, do I get to deduct whatever quarterlies I paid during 2017?
Yes, exactly. Cool. Right. And what I'm saying is make sure you don't have a balance due on your Oregon return in 2018, because when you pay that, that won't be deductible according to each of these bills.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
And one other thing, this is probably a great year if you are charitably inclined to donate stock to charity. So
low basis stock.
Exactly right. And the benefit of this, and this is regardless of either set of rules, the current rules or the future rules, but when you donate stock to a charity, especially stock that has appreciated, like you said, Carl, low basis, you don't have to recognize that gain and you get a deduction at fair market value. I don't know why folks don't make all of their deductions to charity from stock and take gain off the table. It seems like a pretty good way, and you get the fair market value deduction. Do that by the end of the year. If you're an itemizer, especially if you're close to that standard deduction, the new amount's going to be around $24,000 for a married couple. Mm-hmm. So definitely something to consider. And I guess that gets us fairly close to our next break. I'll make one final little point. The home sale exclusion rules, the 2 out of 5 years,
yep.
I just saw this last night when I was reading through that ugly document. It's now going to be changed to 5 out of 8 years of ownership.
Ooh.
Yes. So that's
that's not going to be good for a house flipper.
That exactly. And that's the whole point, is they are broadening those rules to make it a little more difficult for the short-term person. It's going to be, you have to own and use it for 5 out of 8 years instead of 2 out of 5.
Hmm.
So that's another interesting change to watch.
Yeah. Well, that is a good, I don't know that it's a good thing, but it's interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
For people who, live in their home and stay, that's okay. That's a good thing. They can, same amounts, $250 and $500 for
It sounds like the exclusion.
One spouse or...
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, for single, $250, married, okay. $500,000. That's okay. Right.
Well, have you heard anything on in your investigation of this tax bill? Have you heard anything about, I guess what happens if we get the Senate bill that basically doubles the estate tax exemption from... Mm-hmm. I think it's $5.49 million per person, or roughly $11 million per couple.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to gift tax? What happens there? Because they're all tied together.
That's a great question. It doesn't, I didn't read the actual bills. I'm not that much of a, I don't hate myself that much yet. So I'm assuming, and we talked about this week, I'm assuming stepped up basis is going to stay regardless of whether the estate tax is repealed or whether the exemptions are just doubled. So that's going to be pretty significant to keep stepped up basis if it does stay. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming gift tax is going to piggyback right along with the estate exemption amounts, except for the house version makes a few little changes to the gift tax. They actually lower the rate a little bit. So it would almost be favorable to potentially gift if you're.
But if you don't have an exemption, if you've got a doubled exemption amount, that's a lot of gifts.
Oh, it is. We're talking.
That's $22 million.
Exactly right. That's exactly right.
So theoretically, you can have a $25 million, call it a $23 million estate, and on your deathbed, give away $21 million. And you'd have $1 million left, and that would come under the Oregon exemption, and there'd be no estate tax.
That's right. If you have a $23 million estate, give Carl a call.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah. I'm looking for the Cobra conspiracy sort of deduction.
That's what I'm looking for. That's right.
Well, anyway, we are right up to another break time. So remember our numbers, 503-417-9595 and 877-733-1011. Call us about anything you'd like to hear about. probate, you know, wills, trusts, taxes. We got lots of tax stuff to work with today. So we'll be back in just a few minutes with more Investing Simplified.
We do Investing Simplified.
Hi, I'm Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and co-host of the radio program Investing Simplified. I recently left the Warren Allen Law Firm to open my own office. Professional and personable service have always been the hallmarks of my practice. I believe that this move will allow me to spend more time with my clients. For more than 37 years, it has been my privilege to assist clients with practical estate planning with wills, trusts, powers of attorney, advance directives, and other documents so that they may have peace of mind knowing that their affairs are in order. When probate becomes necessary, emotions of family members may become fragile. Having an experienced attorney that can empathize with what the client is going through makes the process much easier. My new office is conveniently located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, just across from Mall 205, and my phone number is 971-229-0585. That's 971-229-0585.
Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney, with Carl's Comments. You can call Carl now at 503-417-9595 or toll-free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Carl Jepson.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. And Kevin Stege and I are in the studio, and we're talking about taxes a lot because there's been a lot of talk about tax on the news and things. And we'll do some of that, but I wanted to touch base on just a couple of things for Carl's comments, and mostly because it's that time of the year where we give gifts. So I wanted to talk to a little bit about gift giving, and we've already kind of started that conversation. But one thing, a common technique is to reduce the size of your estate and thereby reduce estate taxes by making lifetime gifts. And whether they're charitable gifts, that's even better because then you get an income tax deduction for the charitable gifts and you get that asset out of your estate. So you reduce that too. So you kind of get a double benefit from that. But and Oregon doesn't have a gift tax. And so we won't really worry about that too much. And under federal law currently, I mean, I don't want to talk a lot about that because we don't know what it's going to be, but there's currently a $14,000 annual exclusion rate. So a gift of $14,000 or less in 1 year to one person is absolutely tax-free, income or otherwise, or estate tax or gift tax. And whether or not that's going to hang around, but that doesn't help you if you're trying to get a lot of money out of your estate. But because of that giant exemption for the federal government, you can make bigger gifts and really, as you know, you can work the numbers, but you can actually make a lot bigger gifts and can reduce your estate so that it would be below the $1 million. Now, if you've got a really, really big estate or if there's, you know, other kinds of needs or something, you wouldn't want to do that, but only if it makes sense for you from a financial standpoint. But it's just one little technique that might be helpful. Another thing I wanted to talk about is sometimes, you know, gifts are can come back to bite you just a little bit. There's a concept in the law called an advancement, and an advancement is essentially when somebody gets either a gift or a loan forgiven or something like that from their parent or other relative, and it's significant. Say it's a $50,000 gift or, you know, whatever. Maybe they're helping them buy a house or whatever it is, but the donor, the gifter, says, well, that wouldn't be entirely fair, so what we're going to do is we're treating that as an advancement, and they write down, you know, advancement, and they tell everybody else that it's an advancement. Now, that's the issue a lot of times is this an advancement or not? Is it a gift or is it not? So there are some certain things to worry about. But nonetheless, the bite is that an advancement that is in truly an advancement gets deducted from your share of the estate. So, you know, so you get that $50,000 or whatever extracted from your share of the estate later on. And those are things that are important to think about, especially on any time I think anybody makes a big gift. That would be a real important thing to make sure you check with the lawyers to figure out the rules. And they've changed just recently. And my recollection is that you've got to do a few more things than you used to instead of just do it. And I know for one thing, you need to make it known to the you know, to the world, I guess, that it is, in fact, to be treated as an advancement. So that's one other thing. And
that's good stuff. I think the classic scenario is child one needs a loan for a house, but the parent doesn't want to be party to that loan or co-owner, so they just do a personal loan to the child of maybe some significant money, say, you know, $100,000, and like you say, that's not fair to child two, and so the expectation is that child one may not even make repayments on that mm-hmm. loan, which, you know, it probably has its own issues there, but then when the parent passes away, it's understood that that loan will be forgiven and come out of the share, probably with interest.
Right, and you can do that. I mean, it's just a matter of making sure that you do it correctly to make it work, and in many ways, that's a good thing.
Yeah, but that doesn't reduce the parent's estate. I don't
know.
Because they still have a note receivable.
They still have a note receivable.
Exactly.
That's right. They're trading an asset for an asset.
Yeah,
that's right.
You want to consider that if you're trying to reduce the estate.
Yeah, because a gift that's, an irrevocable, gift that's total, that gets it out of the estate.
Hey, one way around that is, so the parent decide they want to get their estate down, so they gift the $100,000, and then when they write up their will, they say, child two gets $100,000 more of my residual estate than child one. I guess that would work.
That's the advancement.
Okay.
You say, yep, this is an advancement, and
then it would get it out.
And then they subtract the $100,000 from the recipient of the gift.
Exactly.
You know, giveth and taketh away.
That's
so,
right.
Anyway, we have some callers, and be patient with us, callers. Roger from Portland, are you with us?
I am. Thanks for taking my call.
Great. What's about income taxation? So,
well, a couple. Actually, I'm riffing on, I think the guy's name was Mike that already called twice, and this might goad him into calling you a third time, which you guys were hoping for. But he had mentioned, as an aside, I love that possible new tax thing of having to own or live in a principal residence for 5 of 8 years, because I live in Portland. And there's lots of outside investment firms that have been coming in and flipping houses like crazy. And the housing market is insanely expensive. So maybe that might put a little cap on that, hopefully.
Well, it could make a difference for those who are living in the houses, you know. And I think there are a lot of people who do that. I think there are some people who split their families up and buy two. You know, I mean, but I don't know.
Okay. So back to Mike. A couple, he was very interesting. First, he said he was single, but I could have sworn he said he had a wife in his first call, so that's a little confusing. But I just like, and this may be beyond the scope of your show, he mentions he's got an income of about $15,000, and I would like to know, how the heck do you live in Portland on $15,000 a year? And maybe he'll call back for a third time, you'll set a record. Mm-hmm. And we'll see what happens. But thanks for your show. Always very informative.
Wow.
Good
question. I think frugally would be the answer.
Yes. Well, I think to answer the first, I think there's folks who are married before the Lord, but maybe not before the state. And we do see that to help folks keep benefits coming and stuff. So I've seen that a time or two, but anyway, good question. I don't think the home sale exclusion rules would change the outside investment companies, because the home sale exclusion is for your principal residence only. I think those investment companies are going to have to look closely at the new business provisions, which I didn't even get into. I have a section written out, and maybe we'll do that once we know what the final rules are, so we're not talking about potentialities, if you will. But those changes could be really significant for landlords and real estate investors. I won't go into those until we know what we're looking at.
Looks like we have another caller. Do we have Steve on the line?
Yes, we do. Thanks, guys.
Retirement question. There we go.
Well, yeah, it's probably not a fair question, but I wanted to just maybe give you a brief synopsis of my financial life right now and see how I'm set up for retirement. I'm 50 years old, and So that's something I'm thinking about, if you guys can help me with that.
We'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
Okay. So I live pretty frugally, and I'm not a spender, but I want to make sure that I'm set up and got enough money that, you know, with a life expectancy of maybe 90, that I'm going to have enough money.
Mm-hmm.
So what can I, what information do you need to help?
Well, I guess that would depend a lot on I know Chuck would want to know a kind of an overall picture of your asset picture. So, you know, and sure. You know, nature of what it is and how much of it there is. Mm-hmm. So
sure. So what specific questions would you have?
I don't know.
Real quick.
Well, how about real estate and and investments?
Okay, real estate. I've got two homes. I have an equity in them of about probably close to $1 million. Probably $900,000 in equity in total in two homes.
Okay, and
one. I'm sorry. One is a rental, and I receive rental income each month.
And then we'd probably want to know what sort of liquid assets you have, investments that you have, retirement plans, 401k, IRA.
So, a 401k, roughly $650,000.
Mm-hmm.
Minimal stocks, individual stocks of probably $25,000.
Okay.
I'm a small business owner. That the business isn't worth anything other than the assets and the receivables, and have about $600,000 in receivables and probably liquid cash around $700,000.
Sounds like you're in a pretty good position in relative to a lot of folks out there. So at this point, I think what you would do is you'd assemble your assets, like you've told us, your income as it comes in each year. Obviously, the $700,000 probably makes you a little earnings along with the rental income. And then, basically, I think what you do is you live frugally, which is that's the first thing you said that stood out to me. It's that's going to make this whole thing work. Is it sounds like you live within your means and the picture you've given us shows us the result of that. And so basically, I think we're down to some calculations. Usually Chuck's the one that runs these based on how much you want each year to live on. You know, are you going to start living non-frugally? Probably not, but...
Your lawyer needs a cobra.
That's right. You know, and so if you're looking at, hey, I need $50,000 after taxes to live the lifestyle that I want to live in retirement, then I think basically you would look at, does the $700,000 plus your 401k generate enough for that? And I would say that that's pretty close. And then you've got the real estate to do something with. You know, I don't know if you want to continue to be a landlord or not. That's something else to decide. So really, I think it comes down to where you want to go from here, what your budget will be for income for those years. You know, when are you going to retire, obviously? And then, you know, you'll probably be getting Social Security on top of this. So, you know, you're looking pretty good, it appears to me.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I know that Chuck always says and stresses for people who are, you know, contemplating retirement is that you want to reevaluate the portfolios because if you've been fortunate enough to have significant gain, but because you took some significant risk, I know that he will suggest moving to a more conservative portfolio simply because your goal now is to preserve the principal of your assets rather than to,
right,
you know, to enhance growth. Right. It's hard to let go of that. I know a lot of people, I've had people in their 90s tell me that they're, you know, still kind of day trading. I'm kind of going, oh, gee, that's great. They get kind of an almost obsession with making sure that they're making extra money when in fact, you know, they really should be concerned with the risk that they might be taking, and so I'm not qualified to give you advice on that other than that that's sort of the general approach that I know that Chuck would tell you. So.
Right, I have no plans in retiring. I think I'm going to work my entire life, and I've seen people that are continuing wanting to leverage their income and do fairly aggressive things in their 70s and 80s. And I'm like, guys, you're worth lots of money. Why are you doing that? And if it's besides just the rush of the game, but they're taking high risk. So my plan would be, you know, fairly conservative. I'm always going to generate some income. I have private investments that I do that will always generate me some income. But I don't ever want to not work. I mean, and so I think that maybe helps, but maybe more be able to work so much more on my terms. Mm-hmm. And I do have a good income of, $100,000+ every year. So I don't spend near that much. And I've got no huge desires to leave a huge estate to my kids. And as long as my wife and I can cover our costs, I think one of the things that concerns a totally different direction is, geez, the cost of what may be healthcare in the future. To if sometime we had to go in a home to pay $5,000 apiece for each of us to live in a home and get proper care, that's something that's on the back of my mind. It's a little nerve wracking.
Well, that's one of the great unknowns, and unfortunately, the business is growing immensely, but so is the cost. I mean, I have many clients who are in various forms of, and they range, you know, I've seen them just in this year from $2,500 a month in a sort of a, not even an assisted care place, but a retirement center type place, to $7,000-$8,000
exactly.
for memory care and or nursing home care, and somewhere in between there is where most everybody falls, and that's gone up. You know, the top line, I would say 5 years ago, the top of that scale was probably more like five, and you could, you know, so it's a whole lot harder. That also varies tremendously with area. Here we're, you know, space is at a premium, and so. But almost anywhere you go, when you have a place where people are going to have people to take care of you, it costs a bundle.
I think you really hit it on the head. That was the next point I was going to go to, and was your long-term care, and that's out of my area of expertise, and I know Carl's, but that's something Chuck and other people that he works with can analyze, or a good financial advisor should be able to analyze for you, is how to mitigate some of that risk with what appears to be some liquid assets to potentially look at a long-term care type setup. And getting in earlier while you're still younger could be a great thing. I don't know.
Well, yeah, the earlier you get it, the better a deal it is. But it's expensive too. Mm-hmm. And you have to look, because not all policies are the same. They're generally not for life anymore. They're for a specific period of years. So they kind of calculate that if you go into like a certain kind of care home, you're gonna have a survival rate of, you know, some years, and there's, you know, it's just like life insurance, and nowadays they do a statistical analysis on how long you're going to live, now they could be wrong, you know, statistics lie sometimes, so I appreciate
your help.
Yeah, so anyway, that's kind of what we're thinking.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm always got that magical number in my head thinking, how much is the number? What is the number for me based on my lifestyle? And, you know, I want to know what that number is, and I think it's changed over the years. It keeps going up as I get older on how much I need. So I appreciate it. Thanks, guys. I appreciate your help today.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Well, I think we have a caller online, Steve, in Portland. No caller in... was Steve. Well, I seem to have somebody else just gave up, I guess.
Oh,
oops.
Should we go to our next break?
We'll go to our next break. We're real close on break time, so we'll do that.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management.
How often do you have a checkup? Annually? Only when you're not feeling your best? Or are you one who waits until there is an emergency condition? High blood pressure, rapid pulse, or sleepless nights could be the result of your investment portfolio or no estate plan. But there is a specialist ready to offer you a checkup on your financial health.
Hey, Gene, Dr. Price. Chuck Price, the financial doctor and author of Investing Simplified, is offering you a free financial checkup. Whether you're asking for a second opinion, a complete financial physical, or investment stress test, Chuck Price, the financial doctor, can help diagnose your money ailments and prescribe a prudent path towards healthy investments and peace of mind. Call 503-253-3000 to schedule your financial checkup or on the web at pfgwm.com. That's pfgwm.com. You'll feel better.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that legal question or that tax question answered now. Call Carl or Kevin now at 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Carl Jepsen and Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you just tuned in, it's probably too late for you to call.
That's right.
Because we're running out of time here pretty soon. But we have enjoyed your questions, and that helps us a lot, because when we know what you want to know, that helps us be better prepared to answer those questions. And I suppose we could try to do a call, but I think it's going to be difficult in these last times. There are a lot of things happening in the world today that affect our finances, and I think this tax bill is going to be one of them. I think, I don't know about you, Kevin, but my guess is that we're going to be spending the next year trying to figure out how it works. Mm-hmm. Or more.
Yes. And I won't even go into the business side, but that's how they're taxing C-corporations versus the pass-through entities. Very significant differences depending on what industry you're in. If you're a professional corporation versus a landlord who, say, makes passive income, mm-hmm. versus a manufacturing company that's active or a retail company, very different setup. So we'll basically have to start from scratch to see what we want to do. And if this all sunsets in 6 years, maybe you don't want to do
anything. We'll do it again.
Yeah, exactly. We'll,
it sounds like a full employment act for lawyers and CPAs.
You know, I read one article that was saying winners and losers, and one of the winners was the high-end CPA and tax planning firms, because this is just...
How about us little law and CPA firms?
Well, I guess we just grovel while we can.
Do we grovel?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we carry the weight of the burden on our shoulders. Is that how that works?
That's right. It should really simplify a lot of things for many, many, many tax filers on the individual level. I think there's a lot of good things, not always to be negative here. There's a lot of good things. I think it levels the playing field for the U.S. internationally, and I think it levels the playing field for individual taxation across the U.S. But... you know, it's not a lot of time to put together complicated tax changes that have been, 30 years in the making since Reagan's changes in 86. So they'll have to be some amendments regardless as we go forward.
Well, one of the things I thought I would share, just a couple of those little known features of the law regarding estates and things that as a last few minutes. And one of those is called, sometimes it's called a no contest clause, but the real name is called an in terrorem clause.
Ah, yes.
Yes. And that says, if you contest my will or my trust, you get nothing. And they're legal.
Don't you have, I mean, it seems like to have,
no,
you got to have that in there.
Yeah.
You got to have that in
nothing.
There. That's right.
And that's, it's actually a statutory provision. Now, I will say this, that it's statutory, but it's strictly construed. The courts hate them, so they will look for every possible way to get around it.
Boy,
so you'd have to, you know, it's very challenging. And I've seen variety. I read one here about a week ago that was really well written, but it was just draconian. It was really harsh. And that's why they don't like it. It's because they don't really like to see people, you know, just because they're trying to assert their rights and getting, getting a question answered or getting their rights determined, to lose them just because they raise their comments. So, well, I'll let you wait for the next interesting tidbit of legal knowledge. How does someone get a hold of you, Kevin?
I'm at 503-666-5569 or baker-colson.com.
And I can be reached at 971-229-0585. And I'm at Carl at carljepsonlaw.com. And so next week, we'll have a full complement of people, and we'll look forward to seeing you then. And it's now time to leave. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.
We do Investing Simplified.
When you have questions about your health, you go to a doctor, right? But when it comes to your financial health, like what investments will give you the best return, why are you talking to your spouse's cousin Lou? You need Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Chuck Price knows investing is not a one-size-fits-all approach. It's about what's best for your financial health. Sure, investing can be complex, but like your medical doctor, Chuck Price makes the complex simple, so you understand exactly what you're doing and why you're doing it. Sign up for our free newsletter and see our free videos at AskTheFinancialDoctor.com or call 503-253-3000 and make an appointment for a free financial checkup. We'll give you the facts and our honest advice. Then make your own decision. Nothing against your spouse's cousin Lou, but we've been helping people for over 40 years.
We do Investing Simplified.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Call 503-253-3000.